Welcome back to another episode of the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. Got a great show for you today. An NC-17 rated show, so you've been warned. Michael Rappaport, the actor, podcaster. You hear him on TuneIn Radio. You see him on ESPN, Fox Sports 1. He drops by, and we have a pretty spirited debate about a number of topics in the NBA. We dive into the Knicks right off the top. We talk about the playoffs, the MVP race, all that and more. Mike's terrific. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Go over to Apple Podcasts, formerly known as iTunes. Give us a rating, post a comment. It's simple, it's easy, it's free, and is the best way to make sure we do this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. Joining me on the pod this week, I'm very happy to have Michael Rappaport, actor, podcaster. You see him on ESPN. You see him on Fox Sports. You see him on, you hear him on TuneIn Radio. What time is your show on TuneIn, Mike?
TuneIn with Kenyon Martin, the two-man weave. It's 5 to 7 Eastern every Wednesday until the playoffs are done.
Let me say this first before we get into all the stuff we're going to get into. You can take your Godfather. You can take your Citizen Kane. Give me Beautiful Girls any day of the week as one of the better movies ever.
All right.
I'm telling you, that was one of the first movies I became completely obsessed with.
How old were you when it came out?
Oh, God. What year was it? Is it late 90s?
I think it's like 96.
96. So it's probably 16 years old. Okay. So it's probably 16. And, all right. But it resonated even later because it's a guy from New York that goes back to the Boston area to see all his friends that are still doing a lot. That's me. I go back to Boston.
Right.
And my friends are, and even the characters, like the Mo character, I have a friend that's just like that. Multiple kids. And you got a line in that movie that I think he said something along the lines of, he's like a mental patient that doesn't know he's mental.
Right.
That applies directly to my boy.
Yeah. We had a good time making that movie. It was fun. It was a fun cast. We were all sort of bunkered down in Minnesota during the winter.
Yeah.
And, you know, the guys were there the whole time, but like, you know, Rosie O'Donnell would come in and obviously Uma Thurman was there and, you know, different people would come in and out. And it was Ted Demme, the great Ted Demme, passed away. But it was a fun time. It was a fun cast. Matt Dillon, Natalie Portman, Timothy Hutton.
That was like a who's who a cast, like before you guys kind of took off there.
Yeah, well,
like,
Matt and Tim Hutton had been around for a while. I mean, both of those guys have been acting since their late teens. Mm-hmm. And Matt Dillon was, you know, I mean, he was, you know, you're younger than me, but Matt Dillon was such a big star when he first popped. And he was just such a guy's guy and the ladies loved him. And, you know, it was just a real cool time to work with him because I grew up really liking his films before I even thought about acting. So it was like cool for me to do that. And with Tim Hutton too, who had won the Oscar for Ordinary People. And I used to tease him that he won the Oscar for Ordinary People over Joe Pesci and Raging Bull.
Yeah.
And the fact that Ordinary People won the Oscar over Raging Bull, I used to fuck with him all the time about that.
It's such a well-written movie too. And I look for that in some movies. I'm sure you look for it as an actor. Whether it's Memento, Fight Club, those are great, well-written movies. Mm-hmm. I thought Beautiful Girls on a different level, like Scott Rosenberg, tremendous writer.
Boston guy, it was a good time.
Wrote the shit out of that movie. Also, the guy that last dated Bridget Moynihan before Tom Brady. Had the great line of, I thought the days of losing the girl to the quarterback were over in high school.
Yep. he was dating Bridget Moynihan and then Tom Brady came in and behaved like Tom Brady, which is a whole other conversation. But Tom Brady. And then Tom Brady met Giselle and started behaving like Tom Brady. So shout out to Tom Brady for doing what he does.
Being Tom Brady. I want to get to the playoff stuff with you, but I got to ask you first about your Knicks. Mm-hmm. Because you were on my radio show recently, and I said this to Adam after you went up. I felt like you pulled your punches on the Knicks. I thought you'd be more pissed off at what you're seeing in New York the last couple of years. I thought you'd be more angry at Phil for what he's not doing and how he's frankly embarrassing the franchise with some of the things he's done the last couple of weeks. Are you okay with Phil?
I don't remember when I came on last time, but I'm not okay with Phil. I'm not okay with Dolan, but I'm really not okay with Phil because I believe Dolan has given the keys to the Madison Square Garden and basketball decisions to Phil Jackson. And amongst other things, and you know, you could go over the details and chime my memory, but I don't care if Carmelo is the answer, not the answer, holds the ball, doesn't, he's not LeBron or Dwayne Wade. I think that's proven. But for Phil, to disrespect his players and to, can I curse?
Yeah.
And to shit on his star guy that he signed to a no trade contract.
Yep.
Publicly, at a one or two or maybe three times he's spoken this season at the after the season's over, as if any of this has to do with Phil Jack, as if any of this has to do with Carmelo, is disgusting. I think is totally unprofessional. And I've never seen it done before in any sport. For him to, you know, say he'd be better off playing somewhere else, I think it's a fucking joke.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I just think it's so wrong on so many levels. And I think it's fucked up. And I think it's unfair. And obviously Carmelo, you know, he has his limitations as a player, but it's not like he's not still very effective and wasn't still an all-star. And the thing that bothers me, I mean, there's a bunch of things that bothers me about that particular thing, but when Derrick Rose disappeared and you send out Jeff Hornacek to deal with the press, and then the Charles Oakley incident, which was humongous, like we forget about it because there's so many different things that go on. Time goes on, you know, things happen and there's MVPs and not MVPs. But in my opinion, when Dolan had to go on ESPN radio and answer questions to the press, although he was involved, instead of Phil, who we want to hear from. Phil can control like the tempers to a certain point of the fans by talking. But for him to sit there all stoic during the games, not say shit, look like he's going to fall asleep during the games, and then to finally pop up at the end of the season and his, you know, and shit all over Carmelo, I think is not fair.
Yeah, I'm with you there. He gives Carmelo the no trade clause, and that,
I mean, why would you give him the no trade clause?
Yeah.
And you know, if I was Dolan, if I wanted to get control of the Knicks and get control of New York City and get everybody off my back, when that Oakley thing happened, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
I would have said, yo, you're the GM, paying you $12 million a year. Go give 5 minutes to the press. No. I'm going to ask you again. I'm your boss. You're the GM. Go give 5 minutes to the press. No. Then you're fucking fired. I'd have fucking fired him on the fucking spot. And people would have been like, okay, Dolan isn't fucking around. And that's your fucking job. Jeff Hornacek, I don't give a shit if they brought in Jeff Hornacek, Red Auerbach, or the ghost of Red Holtzman. If a GM is implementing and forcing the coach to run a system, and basically they're just a puppet, they're just a vessel that the GM is sort of coaching through, they're never going to get respect. Jeff Hornacek's career as a coach is fucked. He's fucked. He's going to get fired from the Knicks eventually. Whether it be, it doesn't look like it's going to be this summer, but it'll be next year or next mid-year or in the first 2 months. They already have it planned out. He's never going to get hired again because this was a disaster. He had a good run in Phoenix. It was cut short. They made the trades. And now any coach that has to be a vessel for Phil Jackson or for a GM, the players aren't going to respect them. They're not going to respect them because it's like, yo, we're not listening to you because we know everything you're saying is regurgitated from your fucking boss.
Well, my biggest issue with the Knicks traces back to Dolan and the desire to win the press conference more than winning, actually winning.
And what press conference?
He wins the press conference by hiring Phil in the first place. It's bring in Phil Jackson.
That wasn't greatest. A bad idea.
Oh, that was a terrible idea.
But why do you think it was? No one was talking about Phil Jackson, no, what a disaster. Who would have thought it would have been this bad? Why would we predict that it would have been this bad?
I couldn't predict it'd be this bad. I could have predicted it'd be bad.
Why?
Because he's not a GM.
How do we know?
Because he's not.
Because
he's a 60-something-year-old man who has never done the job before, and this job is a young man's game. There's a reason the best in the world are like these 30, early 40-somethings like Sam Presti and Masai Ujiri who travel the world on a weekly basis doing this job. Phil, just like, and I had the same problem with Magic Johnson. I don't believe that Magic's going to work out in L.A. for the exact same reason I don't believe in Phil. It's a 24/7 job. These guys take a week off per year. That's it. Mm. And they're grinding. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you can't just say if you're a Magic or a Phil, I'm going to delegate to my lieutenants, because not every decision organizationally is unanimous. He got lucky.
Phil, we're talking
Phil,
about.
Phil got lucky that he drafted Porzingis. There were
but
people
that's
that
not
wanted,
lucky.
He wanted Moody. There's people that wanted Moutier. He got lucky. He listened to Clarence Gaines and he got lucky on that call.
But wait, how do you say he got lucky?
He pressed the button.
So listen, I just sat here and bashed my own guy. You can't say that he got lucky. He pressed the fucking button. He drafted Porzingis. Now, that draft class, I don't remember, it was Willie Cauley-Stein.
Not good.
Okay.
Moutier was there.
Not good.
Not good.
Who was so he did. So we can't just shit all over everything. Whether it was him, whether it was this guy, that guy, he drafted Porzingis, and we. And as much as I want to, as much as I'm frustrated with it, that is his stroke of genius that we got.
Yeah.
So we can't just piss all over it and say he got lucky. He drafted him. No one knows.
But here's
maybe
why
the
I say
basketball nerds were talking about Porzingis.
No.
But you guys weren't saying draft fucking Kristaps Porzingis. There was no footage of him.
Well, okay. Two things. One, there was. Second, he never went overseas to go and see him. Never. His guys did. He didn't go and see him.
Okay.
And that's a problem.
But his guys did.
But you know why? Giannis right now, one of the best players in the NBA. You know why he was drafted where he was drafted by Milwaukee? Because John Hammond went overseas, saw him play, and figured out this was going to be the guy. Now, he won't say that. He's not that good.
I got you.
But you got to go and do the work. Got to do the legwork in this stuff. Physically. Like, some of it's not even his fault. Like, physically, he can't do it.
I get you on that. And I agree with you on that. But I'm not going to discredit the fact that his guys or whatever. And I wish his guys... Hernan Gomez is going to be a good player.
Could be, yeah.
Kuzminskas is going to... I'm not saying they're going to be all be fucking Dirk Nowitzki, but those are good players.
Could be.
They're good pieces for a team. I don't know what the fuck to do, man. I don't know what the fuck to do with this team. I have no answers. I don't believe you have any answers. If I was going to...
I got an answer.
What
I'll
is
give
it?
An answer tomorrow.
Fire Phil.
Hire Masai Ujiri.
Is he available?
Drag him. You can probably extract him from Toronto at some point. I would hire him in a heartbeat.
As a GM.
Because Masai Ujiri not only is extremely good at his job, but is extremely personable and would have the media eating out of his hand within a matter of weeks. He would be doing exactly what Donnie Walsh did for those couple of years. And there was no better time in this last decade plus to be a Knicks fan, I think you'd agree, than the time Donnie Walsh was running the team.
Yep. But it was a different time, though, because in the 90s, there wasn't Twitter.
Well, this was 2007, like that when Donnie was running the team.
Yeah, but Donnie wasn't like Mr. Personality. He had done his best stuff in the 90s. I'm saying like 2007 wasn't 2017 in terms of the instantaneous press conference. Holy shit, what did Phil just say? Holy shit, what did this one just say?
Right.
It's not like Donnie Walsh was like, you know, we liked him. He was a New York guy and the proof was in the pudding. But now I agree with you. You need a face to go with it. And if Phil... seemingly cared more, he could be that because he's Phil. He has that fucking star power. But for I know it's like, you know, I'm hanging on this Oakley thing, but the Oakley thing, we were so distraught. Knicks fans and basketball fans, and it became like a cross-cultural thing. Like it was like a mainstream thing. For him not to say anything was just like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
This ain't my problem. And it's like, it is your fucking problem. You're getting 12. You could go on Mike and Mike or whoever the fuck. Go whoever the guy you like to talk to. Talk for 5 minutes and clean it up a little bit.
Well, you should do more than that because...
the very least.
Most GMs across the NBA, and let's, you know, Phil's got a different title, but it's the same thing. Most guys like that across the league are accessible whenever...
I agree.
You kind of need them.
And
the accessibility needs to happen. You can't just vanish. I mean, September 23rd, was the last press conference before this one. That's insane. That's insane.
We had a player disappear before a game.
Yeah.
We had Oakley.
They sent Hornacek out there for that. That was embarrassing. Hornacek should quit.
Jeff Hornacek is going to get fired probably 2 months into the season next year. Did they know they're going to get rid of Jeff Hornacek? And where's he going to go? He's fucked. He's going to be on people's benches or he's going to retire from coaching. He's fucked. Just like Derek Fisher's never, not that he should have been hired in the first place. Yeah. That was a joke. I'm not making any excuses for Phil. It's been a disappointment. I'll tell you, I'm here in New York doing some stuff for the Tribeca Film Festival.
Yep.
And I was at this event and Dolan was there. Now I want to make sure I preface this because if this gets taken out of context, you could show that. I would never misbehave, disrespect, act out of character or any of this stuff. So if this gets pulled and you put on the thing, you just make sure you play this. That I would never, ever, ever do what I was thinking about doing when I saw him. And it wasn't just me. I was in this restaurant and there was workers. It had nothing to do with the film. These are guys. These are fans coming over to me. You see Dolan's here? And I was like, no. He was like, he's right over there. And I was like, holy fucking shit. And like, I started to just think of all the trouble and all the problems. And like... if like maybe he
just
goes,
all bubbles to the surface.
Maybe if he goes by the window, or maybe say he wants to go smoke a cigarette on the rooftop. It's like the Untouchables where, and now I would never do that. I would never, and I would never go over and say anything to him. It's not the right place. I was glad to be where I was. It was a Tribeca event, but in my head, I'm thinking, well, maybe if I happen to bump into him when he's by a window, maybe it's just 8 years and possibly the district attorney is a Knicks fan and maybe it gets pushed down to 4. And I would never, ever do that. But I'm also thinking like, you know, my name and my fame and my appreciation as being a New Yorker, I would never be able to top that. There's nothing in my life that I would ever, me, I would never be able, I'm never going to cure cancer. Not going to figure out the way to world peace. But, so it crossed my mind. It's a mess, man. And you know what, Chris? You're telling me you're from Boston. New York is the mecca of basketball.
Yep.
It always will be the mecca of basketball. If you walk a mile in any direction from where we are right now on the west side of Manhattan, you'll run into a basketball court. Whether they're playing basketball, kickball, roller skating, rollerblading, or it's empty, the fabric of New York City in any five borough, the architecture is basketball. And we deserve better. And I used to go to the games in the 80s. And I'm not talking about 82, 83. I was 13. I'm talking about 86, 87, 88. I used to walk around the arena. You had free reign because no one was there. Until motherfuckers spend their money going to see Broadway shows or keeping their money in their pocket watching Netflix, things aren't going to get better. This Phil Jackson experiment is a fucking disaster. It's a disaster.
And you must, I mean, look, as a Knicks fan, you can't look at Boston and support them in any way. But you must.
Yeah, I do.
But
I
you
do
look so. At that. You look at that franchise and the functionality
right.
of it.
Yes,
like an owner that hires a very good GM who hires a very good coach. I mean, it's just simple functionality matters in the NBA. And free agents, I can tell you, they look.
Yes,
they look at these situations. I was talking to Caron Butler about this the other day. He's like, "Look, man, everyone's looking at Melo and saying Melo does not deserve this.
We're fucked.
Like, why would we go to the Knicks?
Nobody
like,
is.
They'll still be able to get the Joakim Noahs of the world. If you want to pay an old, faded player 4 years, $72 million, you absolutely can do that. He'll absolutely sign there. But if you have to compete for free agents, you're not winning that fight.
Nope.
There's the appeal of New York. It lacks the mystique anymore. You don't.
Done.
You don't need Broadway to become a marketing star. You've got Kevin Durant was the second most advertised player in the league last year. He played in fucking Oklahoma City. Like that's like there's no longer you don't longer have to be in New York to be a star.
Anymore. I agree. And in this realm that we have here, we're done. I don't know.
That's a fantastic t-shirt by the way. Jake LaMotta.
So let me ask you a question because you know all these things. So in the summer, what's going to happen with the Knicks? We're going to get what kind of draft pick? Who are we going to draft?
Well, you cross your fingers and hope you land in that top three. But even then, like if you're going to play the triangle, do you really want to stick Markelle Fultz, Alonzo Ball in the triangle? Does that make any sense? These are dynamic pick and roll point guards. These are MVP potential guys that play like Derrick Rose did back in his prime. Do you really want to
Lonzo
stick them?
Balls like Derrick Rose
nah,
back
more,
in his prime?
Markelle Fultz might be. Markelle Fultz might be. Ball is a different type of player, but both of them are pick and roll players.
Right.
Yeah, both of them. Do you really want to stick them in the triangle?
I think you should, if we're making a meal and I want a turkey Thanksgiving meal and they say, well, all you got is chicken wings and then we're not having turkey for Thanksgiving. We're going to have some great ass chicken wings. You're not serving turkey dinner for Thanksgiving when you got fucking chicken wings and a ham. You could still have a great, and that's the thing I don't understand. And I'm not Mr. Basketball. I don't know all the details, but I've never in my knowledge seen a GM force the team to play such a specific, I guess GMs, they want to have say, they have this, play this guy, play, but to force them to play this way that obviously isn't working. And the triangle lessons and the triangle tutorials, fuck the fucking triangle. And if it's so simple, why the fuck is it so complicated for all these? They're not dumb.
Yeah.
These are real basketball players. No one understands it. It doesn't work. I don't get it. I'm sick of the Knicks. I'm so, and I wish I had another team to really like, but I can't. But the fact that we're sitting out there cheering at the last game of the season for Ron fucking Baker, no disrespect to Ron Baker, don't go to the game. Go to see fucking Hamilton. That thing sucks too. Go waste your time and your money to go see Hamilton.
Tough to get tickets.
Right. Go waste your time down there. Get fooled and think that that's a hip hop experience. Go down there and see that fucking, that con job.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about something more, well, actually, this is not really a positive topic, but the news yesterday, Steve Kerr, likely going to miss, well, he's going to miss game four, and he has no idea.
What is it?
It's a, it's byproduct of his back surgery. It's the, it's...
Chemical?
It's, no, he just, he's having, still having pain, like the spinal fluid leaking in his back. It's causing migraine headaches, just indescribable pain. Shh. He's going to miss at least game four. The sounds like they have no idea when he's going to come back.
Right.
Is that a big deal to you? Does Steve Kerr make an impact, or is Mike Brown fine as the head coach there?
Obviously, he makes an impact. For this to happen during the playoffs, I think it makes an impact. I think that this team, you know, has such great leadership and such a great sort of chemistry, and sort of everybody plays their role. And obviously the three main guys, they could run the team in terms of the general stuff. You know, the in and out of Westbrook, I'm sorry, the in and out of Durant the last few weeks and him coming back. You need your head coach. Brown is a good coach. I mean, Woodson is a good coach, but...
Mark Brown
is a good coach. Who the fuck?
You got your mind on the Knicks still.
Jesus
Christ.
But I think obviously it's a big deal. What is your opinion on that?
I think it's not a big deal in this series.
This series is fine.
It might not be a big deal in the next series, but if you're going to face the Spurs in a conference finals and you're matching wits with Greg Popovich and they're doing things to you that are taking either Durant or Klay Thompson out of the game with Kawhi Leonard, that's when it matters.
So
if I'm Steve Kerr, or if I'm Bob Myers, the GM of the team, I'm telling Steve, look, just take the next couple of weeks off. Just go home. You can chime in via Skype, you know, just take care of yourself. And then hopefully you can come back for the conference finals, because that's when you need them. That's going to be a tough series. Now, I know San Antonio has got a lot to deal with now with Memphis. They're playing good, but I'm assuming the Spurs win that one.
Yeah.
That, with the way Tony Parker's playing, the Spurs are the boogeyman. They have beaten the Big Bad Wolf before. They beat Miami back in 2014 when nobody thought they would. Wipe the floor with them. They can beat Golden State if they're playing at a high level. And that's where there's the value of Steve Kerr, I think, comes into play.
I agree. It's not a small thing. I mean, if this is 20 games into the season, they did it. But this is the playoffs. And I agree. You're not, you know, Greg Popovich, this is his time to shine. They are playing well. Other teams are playing well. And I think you need your head coach to win the championship at this level. I mean, you can't, it's a problem. It's an issue.
I love Kawhi Leonard, man. Kawhi Leonard made it so tough for me for the MVP vote. So tough.
Did you vote?
I didn't vote.
Do you have a vote?
I did for a long time, but I don't like the idea of media votes having an impact on players' money. So I stopped voting a couple of years ago. I don't like that. That's the All-NBA team. So I think with Paul George, like, he makes an All-NBA team, he gets an extra $70 million, or his next contract could be worth that much. That makes me a little bit uncomfortable where, you know, I vote for that. So I don't do it anymore. But if I did, I would give it to Westbrook because of Westbrook's season. But every time I see Kawhi Leonard do what he did, like in game four, where he's making clutch shots, to me, and I tweeted this the other day, Kawhi is, like, Kobe was the heir to Michael, and Kawhi's the heir to Kobe. This killer two-way player. It's not a disrespect to LeBron. LeBron came up a different way, but all these guys came in young age, that killer mentality right away, immediately.
Kawhi is really, really, really good. I don't like to compare him to Kobe because his what you see from him is more Tim Duncan-ish. It's more sort of robotic. It's more sort of like, I'm going to do what I do. Obviously, it's different positions, but I'm just showing his disposition as a person is so low-key, whereas Kobe wore his emotions on his sleeve. But he's a motherfucker, man. He's great to watch. That game four, I think, is probably the game of the playoffs so far.
Yeah.
Memphis and San Antonio. Those guys were playing ball. They were playing hard. They were playing physical, but it was fair. They were going at it. I love Memphis, Zach, and Gasol. These are type of players that probably won't, they're going to be like relics in a few years, the way we're going with the big guys. I love Kawhi just as the next person, but just the Kobe comparison in terms of his disposition, it's hard to compare him because you can't get him, like, you know, every now and then you'll see him go, let's go, like I saw him say, and that's like, oh shit, he spoke.
Yeah.
But he's just so, like,
He's singularly focused. He is singularly focused.
Yeah. You know, in his disposition.
Yeah. But this is what it goes back to, Mike, on drafting guys, like on just how you scout players.
Yeah.
I mean, he was identified, what was he, 15, 14, something like that in his draft? He was identified, he was a four-man at San Diego State.
Yeah.
And Spurs figured out that he was going to be a great three-man. And they figured out that he was the type of worker that he would get better every single year. I mean, I hate the tanking mentality because it's so stupid. Because if you just do your job, yeah, sure, Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, that's great. You get one of those guys, they're transcendent players. But if you really
think that Lonzo Ball's a transcendent NBA player?
I think he could be.
Like,
I think
transcendent
Fultz,
like what? Like
perennial
Jason,
all-star.
Jason Kidd?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. 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 It Fultz is more of a sure thing to me. I think Fultz is a stud.
I think people
aren't talking about him enough because his team sucked. And
he doesn't have a father as a PR person.
Fucking maniac.
He needs a father.
That's why you want him in New York, because he'll be talking to Frank Azzola every day.
Yeah.
About the triangle.
Oh, you mean
Lonzo. Lonzo. Oh, LaVar in New York.
Can you imagine? He'd be in big trouble if he came to New York.
Oh, man. That would be daily.
He'd be fucked.
Yeah.
That'd be the worst thing for Lonzo Ball if he came to New York. That'd be the worst. The second worst would be L.A.
Yeah, he should go to a small market. Go play in Phoenix. Phoenix is perfect for him.
Go play in Phoenix.
Play with Devin Booker. Nobody's paying attention to you. Just handle your business down there.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Don't come to New York with that shit. they want that. The New York sports reporters, we'll eat him up.
Yeah.
He won't know what the fuck's going on. Put him in a blender. It'll be like a smoothie. 30 games into the season.
We were talking before the show started about the Celtics-Bulls series and how lucky the Celtics have been with Rajon Rondo. Who would have thought in January or February, when Rondo was stapled to the bench, that the Bulls are likely going to bow out of this series because Rajon Rondo isn't playing? I mean, that is a job saver for a lot of people, a lot of players maybe on that team, because Danny Ainge would have made some changes if you get beat in the first round by the Bulls.
I agree. They were clicking, man. Rajon, Wade, and Butler were playing selflessly, and they were not scared, and the rest of the team bought into it. Lopez was just playing. He was playing physical. He was playing without care. He was playing without fear, playing without hesitation, and they had the momentum. They had the momentum, and I don't know what's going to happen now, but, you know, they made it a series. Obviously, you know, the Isaiah Thomas situation, you know, was looming after game one, but I don't even think that was a factor. I think that Chicago came in, they weren't intimidated, and they were like, yo, we're going to beat these guys' ass.
I think it was more of a factor for Isaiah's teammates than it was for Isaiah. I mean, Isaiah certainly, I mean, God knows, I'd hope I never have to experience that, what he went through, but I think his teammates kind of had to walk on eggshells around him for a couple of games.
Right.
I think the best thing that happened for the team was that he went back to Tacoma in between games two and games three.
Yeah.
They focused on their practice. Isaiah handled his business.
Yeah.
And he came back in game three, and he wasn't great.
Yeah.
But they were a much more focused team in that game. That being said, they probably still would have lost if Rondo played.
I agree.
I think Rondo's going to play game five.
I mean, he's right-handed, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's
tough.
It's going to be tough because his right thumb is broken, and he's a tough guy.
The fucking guy played through a torn ACL, played 12 minutes with a torn ACL,
right.
Played half a series with a broken arm
right.
Like against Miami, one arm broken. I mean, this guy has a high tolerance for pain.
Yeah, and he's competitive, and he wants to beat the Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
And as much as I was rooting for the Celtics, because I thought that they would, you know, be the ones to push Cleveland the most, they're fucked and they're exposed because, you know, Isaiah can only do so much. Isaiah could only do so much. And I think that we'll see. We'll see how it turns out. I mean, but this series isn't over. It's 2-2.
Yeah.
And Rondo coming back. If they win game five.
Yeah. Game five's high noon.
Games have been competitive. Even the ones, I mean, the game three was kind of not, but last night was, they played basketball.
I don't like Fred Hoiberg going away from Robin Lopez the way he did in games three and four. Like,
I agree.
Robin Lopez was like Patrick Ewing in his prime.
He was playing very good those first two games.
He was awesome. And then all of a sudden Boston goes small and Hoiberg adjusts. Like, I don't even like the adjustment. Like, just keep going big. Keep hammering them.
I agree.
Lopez was destroying them on the glass.
Offensive
glass in particular, giving them second chance opportunities. That was a mistake.
I agree. We'll see. I mean, it's been fun. I think that the Milwaukee Toronto is very fun. And
that's another team like Toronto. Like, be afraid if you lose that series. Like,
be
changes
really,
could be made.
Oh, then they change. Listen, Toronto ain't never winning shit. As long as Cleveland's around with that team, they're never getting over that fucking hump.
You don't think that second round... I think that second round series is interesting. I think Toronto is a tough matchup for Cleveland the second round.
I think they're a tough matchup, but as much as I can't stand fucking LeBron, that motherfucker, man,
yeah,
he goes into another fucking zone this time of year. He does it time and time and time and time and time and time again. And just when you think he's out or hurt or he's going to slow up, he goes to another place. He's ridiculous.
You look at individual matchups, though, there. I mean, Kyle Lowry and Kyrie Irving. You know, Irving's a little bit better, but that's kind of a wash there at that position. DeRozan wins the two-guard battle. And Serge Ibaka, to me, is the difference maker. Ibaka with that team, he wasn't around last year. They had to play Valanciunas and somebody else in the small lineup. Now they can match Ibaka with Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson. You can. That's what they did. The second half of the season, when they acquired Ibaka, their defense went way up, way up because of that. So, you know, look, they got to get through Milwaukee, and Milwaukee's been a fucking nightmare for that team. Like, Giannis has been running buck wild in that series.
And Thon and the other.
I can't believe Thon. I can't believe Thon Maker can play. I really, I'm
not surprised.
I'm stunned. I covered him when I was at SI, and I used to like, I mean, he just bounced from high school to high school, and I knew he had talent, but I didn't think he had this NBA ready top 10 pick talent. He has been stunning to me with how good he's been.
Who's the rookie of the year? Does the rookie of the year even matter in the NBA anymore?
Not anymore. No. I would have voted for Saric. Narrowly over Brogdon.
Yep.
It was close. Embiid, if he played more games.
Yep.
But Saric, to me, the way he progressed towards the end of the season, he was a little better.
The rookie of the year is an award that I think will never be the same.
Yeah.
I think with these one and doneers coming out, it'll never be like the sort of prestige that it used to be.
It could be fun next year if Fultz and Ball are competing for it, and Ben Simmons,
because
he'll be back in
the
mix.
Right, right, right. He counts.
It could be fun watching that one next
year. That's true. That's true. And the MVP, which I have a lot to say about.
Yeah.
Which I think is the biggest, most overhyped thing of the 2016-2017 NBA season.
Okay.
It exemplifies the skinny genification of the NBA. Okay, which is not just a dress thing. It's a mentality. The fact that Russell Westbrook and James Harden have been campaigning, and the media, you, I participated in it, Skip, Steven, all the fucking basketball nerds, Bill Simmons, all of you, everybody's guilty. Me too.
Okay.
Have having this conversation since the first week of the NBA. Who's going to be the regular season MVP? Who gives a fuck? And the cherry on the top of the who gives a fuck is they're giving the award out now, June 26th, when Russell Westbrook will be eliminated, James Harden will be eliminated, they will have vacationed.
June 26th, or is it?
June 26th.
Is that the show?
That's the fucking show. 2.5 months after the regular season is over.
It's like after the draft, too. Like, yeah.
2.5 months after the regular season over, when we've forgotten about the regular season, when even the hardest of hardcore basketball fan is like, fuck basketball, I need a break. They're going to give the regular season MVP to Russell Westbrook, who will have been to the south of France. God knows where he deserves to break.
Yep.
They're giving this award. It's such a slap in the face. There will be no great speech. There will be no, she's the real MVP. There will be no Derrick Rose vulnerability crying. That will be over. That will be done. And the fact that this is discussed like it means shit, and the fact that Andre Iguodala's NBA Finals MVP is just like a blip, that's what matters. Do you really think Dirk Nowitzki sits there and looks at his, 2007 MVP?
Yep.
And he received it after his team, who had the best record in the NBA, got bumped from the first round of the playoffs. 2 days later, he got his MVP trophy. Do you think he sits there and goes, wow, how you doing, MVP trophy? Do you think Steph Curry looks at his MVP trophy from last year when he was unanimous and caused like the backlash for the darling of the NBA?
Yep.
And he goes, how you doing, MVP? We lost game 7, but I still love you. They don't give a fuck about these awards. These awards mean something 20 years from now. The fact that it's a full season campaign and discussion and debate every single day, every single week to me, and it's given out. This is my thing with the NBA. That's the NBA's fault. Last 2 weeks ago, the NBA ended on a Wednesday. Why not add fuel to the James Harden, Russell Westbrook fire that Friday afternoon? Give that person the MVP. Make it even more Clash of the Titans. Not that OKC would have been able to beat them.
Yep.
But you want people to watch the shows. You want people to watch the games. Why wait till June 26th?
Yeah, well, two things. I completely agree with you there. I think that would have been, and that should be. These are all computer tabulated. You know, Wednesday afternoon when all the votes are in.
They do presidential elections in one day with millions and millions of people, whether they're right, fixed, or voted, or the Florida of it all. There's, what, 500 people voting? You could do that in 15 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah, but the only reason they do it is for TV. To extend their season.
Who the fuck's going to watch that award show? But I'm not watching that fucking thing, and I love basketball.
There'll be people watching it.
I'll catch it on Twitter. Yeah. Who the fuck is going to watch the NBA awards thing after you've grinded out 2.5 months of playoffs? I mean, Chris, you love basketball, obviously, as much as the next person. There's a certain tipping point where you're like, enough is enough.
I won't watch the award show. But I don't care. I'll watch it on Twitter, or I'll follow it on Twitter, and that's pretty much it.
So what are they expecting? It's not the Oscars.
I may... Tune in, like this has been a unique MVP race to me.
Why?
Because you almost always you get a player from a top two or three team that wins the MVP. That's almost always
right.
Westbrook has a chance to break the mold. Westbrook has a sixth seed on that team. Plus, I think he deserves it. I'm not sure who you said Westbrook was your guy.
I would say Westbrook is my guy, but again. And I give the thing, you know, the asterisk to LeBron. LeBron could have easily won it. Kawhi could have easily won it.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying. It's this award that inevitably means shit. Both of those guys are going to be eliminated from the playoffs.
Yep.
They're getting kicked the fuck out. Harden's getting bumped and Russell's getting bumped. So who cares about this award? For it to be a full season.
I think players care about the award, though. They may not sit up at night staring at their trophy, but I think they care about the award.
I think I'm not saying they don't care, and I'm exaggerating, but for it to be a full season campaign, and then we as fans, we're the only ones that are going to watch the show, and it's going to be the hardest of the hardcore. I don't know what they're expecting. It's not the Emmys. Neil Patrick Harris isn't hosting the fucking thing. There's not a song and dance bit. What's the big draw to this show? Give the fucking guy the regular season MVP during the regular season, not 2.5 months later. It's not fair.
Yeah. No, look.
There's going to be thong bikini pictures of Russell Westbrook bathing in the sun in Hawaii, as he should.
Yeah.
He's going to start thinking about the next season when he wins his regular season MVP thing.
I'm interested just because if Westbrook does it, it's going to be that stuff like that rarely happens. Plus, I'm pro Westbrook because in the history of the NBA, recent history, when a star player leaves a team, the caliber of Kevin Durant, that team craters. Whether it's LeBron when he left in 2010, Chris Paul when he left New Orleans, Dwight Howard when he left Orlando, those teams, Orlando's still trying to dig itself out of a hole after Dwight Howard left. Those teams crater. Mm-hmm. This team, the fact they won 47 games is remarkable. They're not a contender, but 47 games on the back of Russell Westbrook, that's why he would have been my MVP.
I agree. And this isn't a shot against Russell or James or any of these guys. He's incredible, man. I was telling my father, who used to be a big basketball fan, he was watching the game with me yesterday, and he was asking about Russell Westbrook. He doesn't watch. He's 84. I was like, everything you heard, everything you read, everything you blips you've heard about Russell Westbrook, it's all true and then some.
Yeah.
The tenacity at which he plays every single play of every single game, and the fact that he has taken that team as far as he's taken it and made the games competitive, although I think they're going to get bumped. I would love to see them make it to six games, but I think it's going to be over quicker. He's
tireless out there. He's tireless.
Freaky, man.
He gets stronger in the fourth quarter.
It's amazing. And he gets stronger in you know, game four of the play. Like, he's just, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to, like, do some scientific experiment on him. Like, his stamina. Like, I mean, obviously he works hard and he trains hard, but he's just born with some sort of freaky gift.
Yeah.
No so question. It's not a knock on him. And it's not a knock that the award doesn't mean anything. I just feel like it's gotten overblown, this regular season MVP. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to what team and what player plays the best during the playoffs. I would love to see them make it a playoffs MVP. Like, who? Because it'll inevitably be the person who plays the best in the finals, but the full playoffs MVP. And it'll go to one of the winners of you know, if you're going to do this award show and make the big, add that award to it.
Add a playoffs MVP to that. I could see that. I could work with that. That'd be good with me. I mentioned Magic Johnson earlier. I wanted to ask you about the Lakers who are now in the middle of a pretty important offseason. First of all, May, the lottery, that's huge for the Lakers. The ping pong balls don't go their way. And I'll be honest, I'm actually, you know, privately kind of rooting for a top three of, you know, whether it's Boston, Denver, and Miami, the teams that didn't tank at the end of the season. I don't like tanking. I don't think tanking should be rewarded. But if they get inside that top three, they keep their pick. And then they've got some options out there because Indiana's going to have to make an offer to Paul George. And if he turns down that deal, they've got to trade him. Interesting summer for Russell Westbrook too in Oklahoma City, because if he, you know, they've got to talk to him about an extension, about the future, whether he wants to be there. If they decide that he doesn't want to be there, they've got to move him too, which is now
this summer.
Look, they can't risk Durant again. They can't. They may wait till February, but they can't risk another Durant moment. They can't lose.
I didn't realize that. With
they
Westbrook.
Can't lose.
No,
Oklahoma City cannot lose two top five players in 3 years,
and they're never gonna. You're never gonna be blessed with that kind of.
Yeah.
Star. Like, that's like, those guys are rare enough to have in the league, let alone rare enough to have in Oklahoma City.
And Westbrook may want to be there. It could be, you know, he's one of those guys. Everyone sort of attaches his fashion stuff to the idea he wants to live in New York and LA. He doesn't. He spends the entire offseason, you said. He's in Milan. He's in New York. He's doing all this stuff with his fashion brand. And he loves the fact that he goes home to Oklahoma City. He plays basketball. Nobody bothers him. And that's how he lives his life. He loves that about being in Oklahoma. He recognizes that, I think, more than Kevin Durant did. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I'm just saying that if they believe that he's not going to re-sign, they've got to move him. They've got to move him.
I agree.
And the question I have for you is, with the Lakers, what do you give up for either one of those players? Do you give it all up? If you get, say, you have the first pick in the draft and you're LA, and Paul George or Russell Westbrook is available, how deep into your well of assets do you go to get one of those two players?
Well, you can't give it all up, because then you're just having exciting.
Understand, though, you're competing probably with a Boston, which has, you know, as many assets, if not more, as the Lakers. Other teams, I'm sure, will jump into that mix as well.
You give a lot up for both of those guys. Yep. And if you have Russell Westbrook on the table, you give up. I think Russell Westbrook, you give up. You're going to give up a lot. Yep. You might have to give up like the Oscar De La Hoya State statue outside of Staples. Like, you could be like, just take this thing because I don't know why it's here in the first place. No disrespect to Oscar De La Hoya, but his great fights were not out in the Staples Center. That being said, and Paul is not that far behind. I don't think he's at Russell's level, but he's a half a step, full step behind Russell. And I think him in LA would be exciting.
Do you give up Brandon Ingram and the first pick for Paul George?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Brandon Ingram is an experiment. Brandon Ingram needs to, you know, he's one of these guys that gets drafted when he's 19, and he might be the guy that you expected when he's 22. He might not. You know, we saw him go to the basket and dunk the ball in one of these tank games. Whoop-de-doo, he's a professional basketball player. Yeah, for Paul George, you give up Brandon Ingram. And who did you say? And the first round?
And the first pick, which turns
absolutely
into Fultz.
Absolutely.
Look, if Indiana doesn't want to give up Paul George, but I think they'd take something like that. That's a legit offer.
I agree.
Because, you know, the Pacers aren't going anywhere either. The problem you run into with George and with Westbrook is that if you empty the cupboard, they may not want to stay there either.
Right.
The appeal of LA is the same. It's the same problem New York runs into.
Right.
It's like you, because these guys, when they get to their second contract or their third contract, they're 27, 28 years old. Like, they're a little bit, they know this next contract is going to take them through the prime years of their career. Mm. They don't want to be in a great market sucking, like being awful for 4 or 5 years. That's the danger they run into.
I agree. I mean, I don't think D'Angelo Russell sucks. I don't think he's great, 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 but I think he's okay. I think he'll get better. He's what, 20?
Yeah.
Is he 20 years old?
20 years old. 20, 21, I think. Same thing with Julius Randle. Okay.
Okay. But I you give up a lot for those two guys. Those are franchise dudes. And Paul George is no fucking joke.
Yeah.
And I disagree with you that I think that Magic is going to be successful in Los Angeles. And I think that Magic knows about winning. And I think that he'll send his soldiers. I think he'll go places. And I think Magic will do well. I think Magic won't leave the Lakers until they win a trophy.
Well, I agree with that. But, I mean, I just don't know what to base. Like, I have no opinion yet on Magic at all. Like, he showed me something by being in Memphis during, I think it was the Sweet 16, when Lonzo Ball was playing.
Right.
Like, you got to get up and go. Like, that's what Pat Riley does. Pat Riley is as conspicuous as anybody in a crowd, but he's at these games.
Right.
He's traveling. Larry Bird hits the road too. Like, these guys are there. They're present. You have to do that if you're a top executive. If Magic does that, I'm with you. Great exec, but he can't sit back there and allow his people to bring him information and say, you know what, I can make this call because I watched 2 hours of film and I'm Magic Johnson.
I don't think he'll do that. Magic is a winner. And Magic is tenacious, and Magic has an ego, and Magic has a pride, and there is no hiding being Magic Johnson. He's not going to, you know, wilt away into the crowd. He's always going to be the biggest person in the crowd. And I just think his ego, his drive, and his lust for that win, he's going to make it happen. I believe that he'll make it happen. They obviously, that team, no matter who's there, they have to fix things.
Yep.
But I just think that Magic is going to see what Phil's done and what he hasn't done. And I think that he's just, he's still vital. Like physically, he's going to be able to move around. He's not 70 something with back surgery. And I think he's going to do good.
That's going to be key because, and he's got a good GM there. Rob Pelinka knows the league. I mean, I go back to like Vlade Divac in Sacramento. I don't know what he's doing out there. Like he was fleeced. Like the basketball nerds, they will fleece you in trades. Like Sam Hankey fleeced him in a couple of trades. Right. He opened up cap space to sign Rajon fucking Rondo, who they dumped after 1 year. You've got to put the work in. You've got to go into this if you're Magic Johnson, putting the same amount of work into learning this job as you did learning basketball. It's the same amount of work.
And as you did learning business.
Business, right.
And it's, you know, it's like, you know, obviously he wasn't making the baseball decisions for the Dodgers, but if they sucked, they'd be like, he'd get all the blame. You know, I just think his temperament, his disposition, and the fact that I just think that goes a long way. And I think it's not rocket science. I think a lot of it is effort, and I think that he will not lack effort. And I think he's got pride, and he knows, yo, I built this shit. Yep. This has to be fixed. I don't think he's gonna back down from what needs to be done.
All right,
he's not lazy. He is a worker.
He's a worker, no question. So it's got to be focused work. Like you've got to know. Like it's all about relationships too. Like you've got to develop a relationship with John Calipari and these other coaches and get, and so.
You don't think Magic Johnson will be able to develop, you don't think he already has relationships with all of them?
But you have to know when they're bullshitting you because a college coach is probably going to say whatever he can to get his guy drafted in the first round because he gets his guy drafted in the first round and then he goes to the high school kid and go, I just got this guy drafted in the first round.
But
you've
Chris,
got to know, be able to have the, you got to have the relationship with them that they're not going to lie to your face.
But isn't the first round easy peasy? Isn't the second and third round where you find your guys
outside the top five? It's a crapshoot half the time. Look at who gets, like Klay Thompson was 10 in his draft. Steph Curry was drafted after Johnny Flynn and Ricky Rubio. Like it's hard. Like in these picks, I mean, the top two picks, fine, whatever. Even they can be difficult. Greg Oden, it's all about. I'm telling you, it's all about the relationships, being at practices, hearing from these coaches what's the truth. It's not easy, and it takes a ton of work and a ton of phone calls. That's why I go back to our original point, where the Sam Presti's and the RC Bufords and the Masai's, like they're grinders.
I hear you. I think Magic. I got no vested interest in the Lakers doing well or not doing well. I believe in Magic Johnson, and I believe him in as a businessman, and I believe him in as a winner. He's always won. He's won life. He's won championships. He's won with the Dodgers. He ain't fucking around.
I think
he has no reason. It's not like he's doing it because he needed a job.
No, I think the jury's out right now on Magic. It's wide open for him to. He's done pretty well so far.
None of these guys are guaranteed. They're fucking GMs. They're not out there playing.
No. But you can, if you're the Lakers, and this goes back to winning the press conference. If you're the Lakers and you have all this money, I don't know what Magic's getting paid, but it's probably significant. Why not try to lure a Presti? Nobody's ever gone to San Antonio and said to RC Buford, like, do you kind of want to move on? You've been there for like two decades. Do you want to try something different outside of Pop Shadow? I don't know if he'd go, but the Lakers are a pretty attractive job. So why wouldn't you hire the best GM in basketball for the last 20 years
mm-hmm.
who has no tie to your organization? That's fine. And you're not going to excite the fan base like you do with Magic, but you might win more. You might be better at your job because you can draft the Tony Parkers and the Manu Ginobili's and those guys of the world.
I agree with that. But I don't think that guy's leaving anywhere.
He might. You never know. Yeah.
Well, you heard things?
No, I don't hear anything. I just know that. No, I don't hear anything specifically on that, but I know that.
I think Spurs guys stay in San Antonio.
Well,
they like it.
They
should.
But their tree is huge. Like, you know, Presti goes somewhere. Dennis Lindsay in Utah. All these guys have done great jobs. Dennis Lindsay is arguably the executive of the year based on what the Jazz are doing right now. Uh-huh. He signed Joe Johnson. Look what Joe Johnson has done this week.
I know.
He's kicking the Clippers' ass.
I know.
It's tough, man. I would always look to those guys first. But let me finish on the Clippers. Blake Griffin done for the rest of the postseason. Another year, another massive injury. If you're the Clippers, what do you do? What's your offseason look like? Understanding, too, that Steve Ballmer, if he's going to bring back all these guys, our guy Bobby Marks tells me that with luxury tax penalties, it would be $250 million to bring back all those guys, Redick, Paul and Blake Griffin over the lifetime of their deals. $250 million to bring back a team that might have lost in the first round.
Can't do it.
Do you bring any of them back?
Yeah, you're going to bring some of them back because you can't get rid of all of them, can you?
No, you can't. But which one do you, what do you do? I think Reddick's gone. $20 million per year he's probably going to get.
Reddick's gone.
Somebody's going to offer him a huge deal.
Reddick's gone.
And he has to take it.
And I mean, what would you do with Blake? The injuries are a major problem.
Yeah, but if I was going to choose one player to rebuild this thing, I'd probably take Blake, if only because of age.
Over CP3?
Yeah. Chris Paul's still a top 3-point guard in the NBA, in my opinion. But what's he? He's in his early 30s right now. And, you know, the shelf life is limited. Are you a championship team in the next 2 years? If you think you are, then maybe. But the Warriors are going to be the boogeyman for the next couple of years. I would take Blake and I would rebuild this thing. It's going to take a while because their draft picks, they don't have any because of some of the deals they've made. But I would rebuild around Blake.
I can't argue with that. I like the Clippers a lot. I don't know what the fuck's going to happen. I mean, they could still beat Utah, but I don't see it happen, especially with Gobert. I thought he was done.
I thought he was done, too. That knee, that was like a Durant-type knee injury, you know, with the bruise and the strain. I thought he was done for a month.
I honestly, it's hard for me to say what would happen, but they're in trouble. Because even if they squeaked by Utah in this first round, who do they have next?
Golden State. And Golden State has punished them, with Blake. That is a 4-round embarrassment, most likely. Against the Warriors.
Four games. So either way, it's either this one or it's like pick your poison. I don't have the answer, man. I don't know what the fuck they're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do. I want to see them do good. But even if they swept Utah and Blake was there, Golden State looming, like that's like, like if they got it to 6 games, that would be like a big deal.
Without Blake, that would potentially be embarrassing. That would be an embarrassing series loss.
And they're going to try to get rid of whoever they play in round two as fast as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And Golden State, you know, I'm not worried about Durant. Well, I don't know. What's the word on his injury?
Calf injury. I like they said it, like if it was game 7 of the finals, he'd play. But, you know, you're kind of cruising through the blade. I get the thinking, you know, if we can beat Portland without him, let's just do it.
You know what's funny about the Golden State? The Durant coming, should he have come? Should he not come? Is he a cupcake? Is he completely overshadowed? I know Steph was sort of cruising the first half of the season and even after All-Star, but he looking fantastic. Yeah. He's looking sprightly. He's looking energetic, and he's looking like the 2-time MVP.
Yeah.
He looking good.
Yeah.
And Draymond is looking good. And then the quiet storm of Klay Thompson, who never gets discussed unless you have it like written down on a piece of paper. Those guys they're good, really good. And Steph Curry is the centerpiece of it. That motherfucker is ridiculous. You know, I know he took, you know, he cruised, not cruised, but if I'm him, I'm like, yo, I've had injuries. I've been doing this, 4 or 5 seasons at this level. Get accustomed to this, Kevin Durant. Get accustomed to this. And that's the beauty of those guys. They have this disposition. Draymond, too, as nuts as he is, he doesn't care about his points. He cares more about talking shit than he cares about his points.
Yep.
And you know, go back to Lonzo Ball and LaVar Ball, because I thought that this LaVar Ball spectacle that has been sort of, you know, the revolution was actually televised. You see guys like Gary Payton, son. You see guys like Big Dog, son. You see guys like Tim Hardaway, son. You see Klay Thompson. You see Steph Curry. Their fathers try to hide from the limelight because they made it to the league. This guy's father wanted to be in the NBA, and you see what you get. You're seeing his hoop dreams be remanifested into the rest of the basketball-loving world hoop nightmares. You don't see any of these big-time guys, Peyton, none of them. They want the kid to shine because they know it's hard enough. He's put such an X on Lonzo Ball's back next year that he's going to have to dig himself out of a hole. There's agents that won't sign him because of this bullshit. Not that he's going to have a problem getting signed somewhere, but he's made a spectacle at it where you look at guys like Steph, Clay, the Paytons, Kenyon Martin's son, who I work. They don't want anything to do with let your kid have his shine.
That's why I think it's the best case scenario for him to wind up as a Phoenix Sun.
I agree.
Out of the limelight, out of the spotlight, just play with, you know, he'd be good. Play with Devin Booker and run up and down the floor. Like, do
you're going to get to your assist there.
Yes, you will have the foundation of something in Phoenix, and you're outside of the spotlight. You go to New York, LA,
problems.
It doesn't end well for you.
When has a father been talked about more than a first one, two, or three pick in any sport.
No.
It's a joke.
Yeah.
And you can't compare it to Manning and all that stuff. It's a joke because Manning was protecting his son. The LeVar Ball is agenda is himself in this fucking bullshit big ball brand fucking nonsense that he says is going to compete with Nike. The fuck are you talking about? Listen, that shit's not going to compete with Skechers, let alone Nike. That ain't competing with Skechers and what other, you know, LA gear. None of the wackest shit ever is big ball brand going to compete with. It's like a weird thing. Like he's like the soccer mom of an NBA first round draft pick. He's like the Kris Jenner of the NBA. It's crazy.
Is LA Gear still around?
I'm sure if they're not around, somebody caked off. There's a guy in LA who owned LA Gear. He made millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Big baller brand is not going to get bought for $200 million by some guy up in, up in Northern California.
No, no question. All right. Tune in radio. They still got the podcast going on. What else do you have happening?
The Iron Rapport Stereo Podcast, the two-man weave with Kenyon Martin, which I love doing. Have you ever had Kenyon?
I've had Kenyon on the radio show, yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
You know, his career, you know, how hard he played and the disposition that he had, but Kenyon Martin can talk details of basketball as good as I've heard anybody talk about basketball.
You know what I like to hear him expound on? And Adam, my producer here, we had him on the show. And this was when Becky Hammon was, you know, kind of circling the Florida job. And he didn't really have a good answer. Not a good answer, but he was a little
scared.
A little uncertain about would NBA players respect a female head coach?
No, they won't. They won't. And
depends on the team, I think. And the support you have. Like, if you put him in Sacramento or put Becky Hammon in Sacramento, it's a disaster. But if she, like, if for some reason she, over the next 5 years, she replaced Popovich in San Antonio, because of the system you have there, I think you'd be better suited or have a better chance.
The first year, second year, but I think the media and like, players argue with coaches. Coaches scream at players. Referees and coaches go back and forth. People take showers. People talk shit in locker rooms. Guys talk about locker room talk, blah, 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 blah. I just don't think it's going to happen. And I think if it happens, you need to treat her. And I love Becky. I've played celebrity games with Becky. Mm-hmm. I fuck with Becky.
She's the real deal.
She's totally the real deal. But I think that inevitably, I just think it'll be a major problem. And I don't see it happening yet. Maybe one day, but I just don't see it happening yet in the NBA.
But if there's a league it happens in first, it's going to be the NBA.
But why should it? Why is the agenda, and no disrespect to any woman trying to do her thing, and Becky Hammon, like I said, I have her number. I text her. Mm-hmm. Not like all the time, but I text her and congratulate her.
How often do you text her?
No, but just from like celebrity, like I know her, like, and it's not her. But it's like, why is there an agenda to get the first woman coach and why not the first Asian coach?
Yeah.
Why aren't we trying to get the first... you know, Mexican coach? Why aren't we trying to get the first disabled coach? Or why aren't we trying to get the first, you know, anything other coach? It's this bullshit of you know, we're all the same. We're for everybody. It's like, this is not the way the world works.
Yeah.
And I know people are like, whoa.
Well, I think those things are like Ettore Messina. I think he's still up in Toronto or maybe San Antonio. I forget where he is. And like one of the great European coaches ever came over to the NBA. I think that stuff is happening. You've got Eduardo Nájera, who was one of the head coaches down in the Dallas area and the D-League team for a while. I think those, what you're talking about, the Mexicans, the internationals, the Asian coaches are... It's happening, but this is more high profile because you just, you see, it doesn't stop you when you see like a Russian coach or a Mexican coach or even an Asian coach on an NBA bench. It does still stop you when you see a female coach on an NBA bench. That's why it's...
As an assistant, it's fine. And in San Antonio, it's fine. But I think taking that leap, and then like my man Patrick Ewing had to go to fucking Georgetown.
Ooh, that's not going to work out well for him, Mike.
Before we get to your reason why, I want to hear why.
Okay.
But my man Patrick Ewing had to get go to Georgetown while Jock Vaughn and who's the coach of Phoenix?
Earl Watson.
Good coach. Patrick Ewing sitting on the bench doing shot charts for Frank the Tank Kaminsky.
Yep.
All he wants to do is do a head coaching job.
Yeah. Oh, he got screwed. As an NBA guy, he got screwed.
And I know he's not a great communicator.
Right.
And all that shit. But like there was like an agenda to keep Patrick.
Somebody down in Charlotte told me right before Patrick the Georgetown job that if you put a resume on top of a GM's desk and don't take Patrick's name off it, he's at the top of the pile because of, you know, his top 50 all-time player. The experience. He's not a guy being anointed as, you know, here, just take this job.
He wants it.
And he's worked for it. He's worked for it, working for the Van Gundys, working for Steve Clifford. These guys, they all sing his praises.
Wait. You don't think he could have taught DeMarcus Cousins how to scowl?
I do.
In Sacramento? Just him teaching DeMarcus Cousins to be a fucking man.
I do think he'd do that.
And to teach a guy like that to be, yo, you're going to start, stop whining. I'm not calling you fucking Boogie. I'm calling you Big Baby Cousins so you cut the bullshit.
I do think he could have. I do.
They
I
had
do
him
think-
walking around the Sacramento airport. He didn't know where he was at the fucking Ben and Jerry's ice cream for 2 days. He was like Tom Hanks in that movie at the airport. Give this guy a job. Why do you think he's going to be? It's going to be bad
because it's apples and oranges. Coaching in college versus coaching in the pros. I think he can do the X's and O's. I think he can motivate players, but I don't think 18-year-olds know who Patrick Ewing is. I don't think he's going to be able to walk into these kids' living rooms and recruit guys. Plus, he was like the fourth or fifth choice at Georgetown. Like they were after a bunch of different other guys before they went after Patrick Ewing. I don't know. I'd like to see it work out for him because I think it could be a springboard to an NBA job if he does well at Georgetown. I just don't see it. Unless his staff is better than I think it is, I just don't see it. I think people don't understand how different college coaching is. Like the John Calipari's and the Rick Pitino's of the world, great in college, can't make it work in the NBA. I think it's probably true the reverse too. I think it's going to be unfortunate for Patrick in the college ranks.
What do you think of my man Mullen?
I didn't follow what he's done. Are they doing anything? St. Like they've kind of,
they got a couple of guys. I don't know. Like I'm not the man to answer that.
Yeah.
But. One of my highlights of the last 5 years was Georgetown, St. John's, and when Mullen took it to the streets during the Big East tournament.
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
It'd be fun watching them play Georgetown.
It was beautiful.
But it'd be fun watching St. John's, Georgetown now, with those two guys on the sideline. That'll be a fun game to watch.
St. John's, if they turn it around and the Knicks being what they are, like, I want to go out to St. John's and give them a pep talk. Chris told me come out there. That's my fucking dude, Chris Mullen. That is my fucking dude. And I want to tell these fucking kids, yo, it's yours for the taking.
Yeah.
Like, if St. John's made it to the top 20, you own New York City.
Yep.
And it's still New York City. And then, like, they should understand, like, you know, what it was back in the days and the fact that there's a spot opening because St. John's can become, what is the word? They could become important before the New York Knicks could become important.
Yeah.
They could actually do it.
All right. They're going to kick us out of here. Tune in radio, podcast. You're here for the Tribeca Film Festival as well this week.
And this is the time of year, Chris. This is the NBA playoffs, man.
I love it.
Three or four games.
Give me some game sevens. If I get game seven in Boston on Sunday, I'll be there, man. Be intense if it goes that far.
It's like running a marathon every day. Like that when you're on the East Coast, that fourth game comes on. It's like, you know, like
you're awake. Yeah, you just pop right back up.
Yeah, but it's like so I actually am looking for the second round so it slimmers down a little bit because those four games on one day and that 9 o'clock start when you're in New York, it is tough, but it's this beautiful time.
Mike, thanks for coming in, man.
It's my pleasure. It's good to talk to you.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Michael Rappaport for joining the show. A reminder, you can listen to Archive Podcast on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download pods. While you're there, leave a comment, post a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.